It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. As anyone who's ever raised a child can tell you, parenthood can be a long, hard journey. Don't get me wrong, there are definitely joys along the way, but it's not without long stretches of hard work and drudgery. Long nights, long weeks, long months, and long years. Then, at some point, you begin to realize how quickly time is passing by. And if you've done well enough and had good luck, your little one, now not so little, is getting ready to leave the nest. That is the position in which Mary Louise Kelly found herself a couple years ago. Her oldest son was beginning his senior year of high school, and she was coming to grips with the fact that, for her, motherhood would never be the same. All this is the subject of Kelly's new book called It Goes So Fast, The Year of No Do-Overs. Kelly, of course, is also a familiar voice to NPR listeners. She's one of the hosts of All Things Considered. Because this conversation is taped, we're not taking calls live on air, but you can always let us know what you thought by emailing us. The address is talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org. Here now is Mary Louise Kelly.
There's a phrase people say to young parents, the days are long, but the years are short. And I think the core insight of your book is that at some point in parenthood, the days start getting pretty short, too. So
yeah.
How did you first experience that pivot in understanding?
You know, it's funny. You write a book and you're trying to figure out, even as you're writing it, like, who am I talking to here? Who's the audience? And one of the audiences I had in my head was my own children. But another important one was I kept thinking, you know, if I could go back and address like the auditorium of moms and dads showing up for pre-K, for first day of pre-K, like what would I tell them? What do I wish somebody had come back and told me? And that's one of the big ones. And it's so obvious. And you're right. There are all these sayings that try to capture it goes so fast, what became the title of my book. But for me, I was staring down suddenly. It felt sudden. I guess I had 17 years to prepare. But I was suddenly staring down that my oldest was about to become a senior in high school. And I'd made all these choices over the years, trying to show up and be present as a mom. But inevitably, there were times when trying to also show up for my job as a journalist meant that I didn't show up as a mom and vice versa. And suddenly I was looking at all of those choices, and I think I got it right on like the big dramatic ones. You know, there was never some incredibly critical camp drop-off or birthday that I missed for my kids. But there were approximately 8 bazillion, you know, little moments, the kind of gray area moments where, I mean, to give an example, All Things Considered goes on air every day at 4 o'clock, and my son's varsity high school soccer games begin on weekdays at 4 o'clock, and there's no way to show up for both at once. And work always, you know, I was required to be at work. That kind of always seemed to trump it. And for years, I missed the soccer games. And then suddenly I was looking at, there just aren't that many more soccer games. If I'm going to make a different choice, I need to make it right now, like this afternoon. And what does that look like? And as I was wrestling with it, I thought probably so many of us have wrestled with these moments where life demands that you be in two places at once and show up for two different groups of people who you want to show up for, and how we navigate all those gray moments. You know, that's life. That's us writing our lives. It's not the big dramatic moments, which I have found easier to get right. It's the accumulation of all the little ones that don't seem dramatic in the moment at all until they're gone.
Until they're gone. Yeah, there is a moment you write about years ago. One of your son's schools calls you in the middle of a workday to say he's very ill. How soon can you come pick him up?
Yeah.
You're taking this call in Iraq. And I mean, most parents confront somewhat lower stakes dilemmas than whether to volunteer to go to work in a war zone, but it's all on a spectrum, right? So what was your thought process as you're balancing being a mother and an international correspondent?
My general broad guideline when I returned to work after my first maternity leave was, you know, I wasn't so naive that I didn't imagine that the two most important facets of my life would ever come into conflict. And I made myself a promise, when the job and the kids collide, the kids come first. And I held true to that in many moments. But, you know, then you fast forward, say, to, you know, just within the last year. War in Ukraine broke out. I had traveled to Ukraine right before the war. It felt like the story of my generation, like one that was so important to tell. And I had done a lot of reporting from Europe and from Russia, and it was so in my wheelhouse. And I had editors asking me to go back as the war, you know, cranked into just the full horror that we have since witnessed. Go back, anchor All Things Considered, report for the network from Ukraine. And every bone in my journalist body is thinking, get on the plane, get on the plane, get on the plane. But at the moment that those requests were coming in, we were in the, you know, the months were dwindling to weeks of my son's senior year. And I thought, you know, he's going to have prom, he's going to have graduation. That doesn't come around again. And while he couldn't probably have cared less if I showed up and watched him pin the corsage on his date for senior prom,
sure,
I cared. And I wasn't ever going to get to do it again. And what I have learned as I've juggled these things, and it is so hard to hold true to, but sadly, there will always be war somewhere in the world. There will always be another election. There will always be another natural disaster. And as important as they are to cover, there's somebody else who can do that assignment. But nobody else can show up and be the mom who takes the picture of your son so excited, so happy, heading out in his poorly fitted rental tuxedo to pin a corsage on some lovely girl. And it mattered to me to show up for that. And I've tried to think about that, tried to hold that in my mind. I can off-ramp and on-ramp for my work. I can't do that as a mom.
That chapter where you write about that difficult decision to turn down the rotation in Ukraine early last year, you also describe this deep satisfaction of professional competence. Can you talk about that dichotomy between, you know, that, what you get out of work, and that ticking clock that was going in your head all last year?
Yeah. I love my job, and I'm at a point in my career where I'm able to say out loud, I'm pretty good at it. I know what I'm doing. Not every day, and I'm still learning every day, and I still make, God, 1,000 mistakes. I mean, where to begin? But there is a satisfaction that comes from enjoying your work, finding meaning in your work, and knowing I'm adding value. I think of that, you know, when I cover the big breaking news stories, the crises, whether it's a war in Iraq or something awful happening in America or something good happening in America or exciting, you know, an election, that we're so lucky as journalists in moments where everybody's running around trying to figure out what's happening and what comes next. I know what my purpose is. I need to get behind a microphone and ask questions and bear witness and establish facts and fact check and provide context and ask tough questions and let listeners listen in on that as they're trying to figure out how to make sense of things that are very difficult to make sense of. I love that aspect of my job, and I'm used to doing it on very tight deadlines. What I was not used to was feeling those very tight deadlines in the other part of my life. You know, you have a child and they're so little for so long and you can't imagine. You know what's coming. You know they're going to grow up. You know that's the ultimate goal. But it really did hit me when there was 1 year left and I knew I was measuring the time of my son being under my roof, waking up every day under the same roof as I was and coming down and rustling around for toast in the kitchen. When those days became finite, and the months dwindled to weeks, dwindled to days, and then he's off and he's happy and that's the way it's supposed to be. He's a first year at university and he's thriving and it's all great, but he's not at home under my roof rustling around for toast. And I felt that clock ticking in my home life in a way that I never had before. And part of the exercise in this book was wanting to wrestle with that and really reckon with my choices in real time as I made them.
Yeah, and you talk beautifully about the sort of laser-like focus you get when you're overseas reporting and how different that is than the sort of being pulled in all those directions at home. And there's like a not a satisfaction, but like a there's an appeal to write to the focus. You don't have to worry about changing the bed sheets in the middle of the night or cleaning up the spilled milk under the table if you're just worried about staying alive. And yet, in our society, parents, especially mothers, can be made to feel really guilty for, you know, some would say indulging in that. Is that something you confronted in your professional life?
Oh, sure. I mean, I write, I think at one point in the book, there is no multitasker like a mother on assignment in a war zone, because one of my memories of you know, when I did make it to Iraq was being on a train heading deep into the Donbass right up against the Russian border. And I'm sending texts, you know, to the newsroom and, you know, trying to write stories on my phone when I could get signal. And among the texts I'm sending are, you know, back to my other son, my younger son, back home, reminding him about the grooming appointment for the Bernedoodle at the doggy day spa that day. Because, you know, like, it is always with you, the multiple things that we're all juggling and multitasking every day. But you're right. But to me, part of the love of being in the field, obviously the major part is you're there telling a story that's important enough that NPR thought I and my team need to get on a plane and go bear witness. That's why it matters. But from a purely personal, maybe even a little selfish point of view, you know, you get to the Donbass and there's just nothing you can do. Yeah, about that somebody spilled milk. You can't organize the carpool logistics from there. You're not going to be able to deal with the dryer, which is rattling and probably about to fall through the ceiling into the room below. I just can't deal with any of that. I'm able, for once, without guilt, just to focus on the work. And man, is that great. And so hard to achieve when we're in our, you know, in our normal routines and daily life. And it's lovely once in a while. And now, you know, as I stare down, as my younger is going to be a senior in high school next year, and I think, gosh, you know, it's only another year or two when I get the call from the newsroom editors saying, can you get your butt on a plane to Ukraine, that I'll be able to say, yeah, and with zero guilt. Because there won't be anybody waiting for me back home.
Mm. As we're coming to the end of our time together, you began by saying, talking about some of the advice you might give to young parents and thinking about the advice you got. What is the worst piece of advice you got as a young parent, or the one that proved most vexing over the years?
Oh, my goodness. That's a great question. I think the idea that the, you know, you're going to make this choice. And for women, it can be particularly pointed. You know, are you staying at home with the kids? Are you back at work? Are you somewhere in the middle? Those can all be true. You can make different choices at different times. I have on-ramped and off-ramped so many times. And if somebody out there has figured out how you can have it all and all at once, like, hallelujah for you. I'm so happy. Could you please write the next book and teach the rest of us how it's done? Because I have not figured that out. I don't know that you can have it all and have it all at once. And I have had moments where I am all in, working like a fiend around the clock in the newsroom. And then moments when I stepped away completely and very happily did not check email or Slack messages and focused completely on home life. And I've done everything in the middle, too. And one of the lovely things about hitting your 50s, which I recently did, is feeling just way less judgmental about the choices I made or anybody else made. Because, you know, I think we're all doing our best.
Yeah. Wisdom, one of those consolations.
Yeah,
aging,
maybe.
Right?
Working
yeah.
on it.
Yeah, we'll see. Mary Louise Kelly, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Brian, it was a great pleasure. Thank you.
Mary Louise Kelly is a co-host of NPR's All Things Considered. Her new book out now is called It Goes So Fast, The Year of No Do-Overs. If you enjoyed any of today's program and you want to share it with someone, you can do that from our website, 21stshow.org, or share a link to our podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, Overcast, really anywhere you get a podcast. You can find us and share us. And you can find links to all that as well at our website, 21stshow.org. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield, Kennedy Vincent, and Jose Zepeda. Our interns are Nick Boyven and Owen Henderson. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director.
Thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again next week.